Welcome back, everyone, to The Deep Dive.
It's been another whirlwind week in the digital world, that's for sure.
Oh, tell me about it. Storage and networking news just keeps coming in hot.
It really does. Security alerts, shiny new products, and those sneak peeks at what's coming next, we've got it all for you.
And you know us, we like to cut through the noise and get right to what matters most.
Absolutely. We've been poring over those security bulletins, product announcements, beta releases, and even some strategic partnerships you might find interesting.
Our mission, should you choose to accept it, is to bring you the essential intel so you can stay ahead of the curve.
Without getting lost in the tech jargon or feeling like you need a degree in computer science just to keep up.
Exactly. So are you ready to dive in?
Let's do it.
All right, let's kick things off with some news that probably has a few Synology users a little bit on edge.
Oh yeah, this is important. Remember that cryptic note in our weekly digest about a finally fixed hole on older DSM versions?
Yeah, what was that all about?
Well, digging into the official Synology security bulletin, it turns out there's a really critical patch for a man-in-the-middle attack vulnerability.
Oh, those always sound scary.
They can be pretty serious. This particular one, they've labeled it CVE-2024-10444, and it came to light during the PWN2WN 2024 hacking contest.
So what's the deal with man-in-the-middle attacks? Can you break that down for us?
Sure. Imagine someone secretly intercepting the communication between you and your Synology NAS.
Like a digital eavesdropper.
Exactly. They're sitting in the middle, listening in on your conversation, and potentially even manipulating the data being exchanged.
So what could that mean for someone using their Synology NAS?
Well, in the worst-case scenario, it could allow an attacker to steal your login credentials, potentially giving them access to your admin account and all your data.
Oh, wow, that's not good.
Not good at all. Synology has classified this as an important severity issue, and it's got a CVSS3 base score of 7.5.
All right, for those of us who aren't security experts, what does that score tell us?
Think of it as a measure of how severe the vulnerability is. The higher the score, the more urgent it is to address it.
So 7.5, that's pretty high, right?
Yeah, it's definitely something you want to take seriously. The technical breakdown of the score looks something like this. CVSS.3.1AV.NAC.HPR.NUI.RS.UC.HAH.
Okay, that's a mouthful and a lot of letters. Can you translate that into plain English for us?
Sure. Basically, it means this vulnerability can be exploited over the network remotely, but it does require a little bit of effort on the attacker's part.
Like what?
Maybe tricking you into clicking a malicious link or something like that.
Ah, okay. So not the easiest to exploit, but if someone does manage it.
Then they could potentially wreak havoc.
Yikes. So what versions of DSM are affected by this, and what should Synology users do to protect themselves?
This vulnerability affects DSM versions 7.2.2, 7.2.1, and 7.1.
Okay, so pretty wide range there.
Yeah. If you're on 7.2.2, you'll need to update to version 7.2.2.72806-3 or later. For those on 7.2.1, it's 7.2.1.69057-7 or newer. And for 7.1 users, make sure you're running at least 7.1.1.42962-8.
Got it. Now, what about folks who might be running even older DSM versions? Are they out of luck?
Not necessarily. Here's the thing. During PWN2EVI in 2024, they uncovered a whole bunch of vulnerabilities, and Synology has been diligently working to address those in older versions as well.
So even if you're running an older DSM version, it's worth checking for updates.
Absolutely. These fixes for older versions range in severity from critical to important, so definitely not something to ignore.
It sounds like Synology has been busy patching things up across their whole product range.
Yeah, Synology Camera, BStation, Replication Service, Synology Drive Server, DSM itself, Synology Photos, even BPhotos, they've all gotten some love.
That really emphasizes the importance of keeping your software up to date no matter what device you're using.
Couldn't agree more. It's one of the simplest yet most effective ways to protect yourself from those nasty vulnerabilities.
Like locking your front door, but for your digital life.
Exactly.
All right, let's move on from security for a moment and talk about something that's always exciting, more storage space.
Oh yeah, this is juicy. Western Digital just teased the release of a 4TB version of their WDB Black SN7100 SSD.
Wow, 4 terabytes in an NVMe drive, that's massive.
It really is. And for those who are constantly battling with storage limits, this could be a game changer.
Gamers, video editors, photographers, anyone with large files, they'll be rejoicing.
I think so. Now remember the SN7100 series launched back in November, and WD made a big deal about its TLC 3D NAND.
Refresh my memory, what's special about TLC 3D NAND?
It's a type of flash memory that essentially allows them to cram more storage into a smaller space and it's generally more cost-effective than older flash memory technologies.
So more storage and potentially lower prices, sign me up.
Right. The existing 1TB and 2TB models already boasted some impressive speeds up to 7,250 megabytes read and 6,900 megabytes write.
That's blazing fast.
It is, and we're expecting this new 4TB version to offer a similar performance boost over older drives.
I'm already imagining the possibilities.
Right. And to put things in perspective, WD's previous high-performance SN770 series maxed out at 2TB, so this jump to 4TB is pretty significant.
It feels like we're finally getting to a point where running out of storage space is less of a constant worry.
I'm sure many will agree with you there.
So when can we expect to get our hands on this storage behemoth?
Well, the product identifier is WDS400T4XOE-000CJA0, and there have been sightings of a March 2025 data sheet floating around.
So pretty much right around the corner.
It seems that way. SanDisk's UK store is already listing it for pre-order at around £256, which converts to roughly $332 USD.
Not bad for 4 terabytes of cutting-edge NVMe storage.
And get this, the endurance rating is a whopping 2,400 TBW.
TBW.
Terabytes written. It basically tells you how much data you can write to the drive over its lifetime before you might start to see performance degradation.
2,400 TBW, that sounds like a lot.
It is. For most typical users, they'll probably upgrade to a newer drive long before they hit that limit.
Makes sense. But it's good to know it's built to last.
Definitely. Now, one small caveat, the 1TB and 2TB models do have a slight edge in terms of their advertised read and write speeds.
Ah, okay. So if you're all about pushing those absolute top speeds, the smaller models might still be a better choice.
Yeah, but I suspect for many, that massive 4TB capacity will outweigh those minor speed differences.
Especially for folks who need that extra space for video editing, game installations, or anything that generates large files.
It's all about finding the right balance for your needs.
Absolutely. And speaking of finding the right balance, it looks like Asister has made some adjustments to their NAS lineup.
Oh yeah, we noticed they quietly marked three of their models, the AS1102T, AS6602T, and AS6604T, as discontinued on their website.
So if you were thinking of picking one of those up, you might be out of luck.
It seems that way. They're no longer listed as actively being sold.
A little bit of a bummer, but I guess it's normal for product lines to evolve over time.
Definitely. Now, if you already own one of these discontinued models, don't panic.
Good point. It's not like your NAS is suddenly going to stop working.
Exactly. Asister has confirmed that support and warranty services will still be available for those models.
So you're not being abandoned?
Not at all.
Okay, let's shift gears now and talk about some big changes coming to a popular media server platform, Plex.
Oh yeah, Plex has announced some pretty significant updates for 2025, and they involve some price hikes and a bit of a shakeup in their subscription model.
Okay, so if you're a Plex user, this is definitely something to pay attention to.
Here's the deal. Starting April 29th, 2025, PlexPass subscriptions are going up in price.
How much are we talking?
Well, the monthly price is going from $4.99 to $6.99 USD.
Okay, so a couple of bucks more per month.
Yeah. The yearly subscription jumps from $39.99 to $69.99 USD.
A bit more noticeable there.
And the Lifetime Plex Pass Brace Yourself is going from $119.99 to a hefty $249.99 USD.
Wow, that's a pretty substantial increase for the Lifetime option.
It is. However, there's good news for existing Lifetime Plex Pass holders.
Tell me more.
The price increases won't affect them. They're locked in at the old price.
So if you were on the fence about getting that Lifetime Plex Pass, now might be the time to jump on it.
Absolutely. You could save yourself a chunk of change before that April 29th deadline.
Good advice. But wait, the changes don't stop there, do they?
You're right. Plex is also introducing a brand new subscription tier called the Remote Watch Pass.
What's that all about?
It's specifically designed for individuals who want to stream content remotely from personal media servers they have access to but don't actually own themselves.
So like if you have a friend with a Plex server and you want to watch their stuff while you're on the go?
Exactly. It's like borrowing their Plex server, in a sense.
Interesting. How much will this Remote Watch Pass set you back?
The introductory price is $199 per month or $19.99 per year starting on April 29th.
Seems like a pretty affordable option.
Yeah, especially if you only need it occasionally.
Okay, but this new pass kind of ties into another big change, right? Something about remote playback not being free anymore?
You got it. This is a pretty fundamental shift in how Plex has traditionally operated.
Okay, lay it on me.
Remote playback for personal media will no longer be completely free for those who don't have either a Plex Pass or this new Remote Watch Pass.
So if you've been used to accessing your home Plex server while you're out and about without paying for Plex Pass, that's about to change.
Yep. But it's crucial to clarify that if you do have an active Plex Pass subscription, you'll continue to have uninterrupted remote playback from any Plex Media server.
That's good to know. And what about users who have access to my Plex server? Will they need to pay for remote access?
Nope. If the server owner has a Plex Pass, anyone they've specifically granted access to can stream remotely without any additional charges.
So the server owner with Plex Pass essentially covers everyone else.
That's the gist of it. It seems like this change is primarily aimed at individuals who are accessing multiple Plex servers where the owners themselves might not have Plex Pass.
It's a bit of a shift in the landscape, but I guess it makes sense from a business perspective.
Definitely. It's all about finding ways to monetize the service while still offering value to their user base.
All right, let's wrap up the Plex news with a more positive change for mobile users.
Oh yeah, this is a good one. Plex is finally getting rid of that annoying 1-minute playback limitation in their mobile apps.
You mean that mobile unlock fee, the one that forced you to pay just to watch something longer than a minute on your phone?
That's the one.
Good riddance, I say.
I'm sure many will agree this change will apply to both Android and iOS apps, but only when you're on your local network.
So, at home, on your Wi-Fi, you can now freely watch to your heart's content without those restrictions.
Exactly. No more having to pay just to finish watching a video on your phone while you're relaxing at home.
That's a welcome improvement.
It really is. And finally, Plex has also updated their privacy policy and terms of service.
The legal stuff, always a thrilling read.
I know, right? But these updates are actually important to be aware of. If you created your Plex account before March 20th, 2025, you won't see any immediate changes.
So, no need to panic just yet.
Nope. However, you will be asked to consent to some additional uses of your data later on.
All right, so pay attention to those prompts when they pop up.
Exactly. Now, on a reassuring note, Plex is emphasizing that they are not sharing or selling any information about your personal media library or what you choose to watch from your own server.
That's good to hear, especially in this age of ever-increasing data privacy concerns.
It's always nice to have that peace of mind.
Okay, let's move on from Plex and talk about some new beta software that's just been released.
Sounds good.
Synology has dropped Synology Photos 1.8 beta, and it's packed with some intriguing features for anyone running DSM 7.2 or above.
Especially those of us who love to take photos and have those massive photo libraries on our NAS devices.
Definitely. And this beta might be worth checking out, even if it's not quite ready for prime time.
What are some of the highlights?
Well, one of the coolest new features is support for stacking similar items.
Interesting. What does that mean exactly?
Imagine you take a burst of photos of the same scene, maybe capturing a fleeting moment.
I do that all the time. My camera roll is full of those.
This feature will group those similar photos together, making your library much neater and easier to manage.
So no more scrolling through dozens of almost identical photos.
Exactly. It's all about reducing clutter and making photo management less of a chore.
Love it. What else is new?
They've also added manual face tagging.
So you can finally correct those moments when the AI gets it wrong.
Precisely. Sometimes the AI misidentifies faces, or maybe you want to tag someone who's not in your contacts list.
Yeah, that happens to me all the time.
Manual face tagging gives you that extra level of control over how your photos are organized and who's recognized in them.
That's a great addition.
Another small but handy improvement is the ability to manually generate image previews.
Oh, so if a preview isn't loading correctly, you can just force it to generate a new one?
Exactly. It's a small touch, but it can definitely smooth out those little bumps in the user experience.
I like those little quality of life improvements.
The object recognition feature is also getting an upgrade.
So the AI that tries to figure out what's in your photos is getting smarter.
Yep. But this enhancement is specifically for certain Synology NAS models, the Plus, Value, and some J series that have at least 2 GB of RAM.
Ah, okay. So not every NAS will benefit from this.
Right. But if you have a compatible model, you should see improvements in how Synology Photos automatically categorizes your pictures.
Always a good thing.
Now, for the video lovers out there, Synology Photos 1.8 beta adds support for streaming MP4 videos encoded with the VP9 codec in their original quality.
VP9. That's a pretty efficient video codec, right?
It is, but there's a small note for Safari users. You might run into compatibility issues with VP9 Profile 3 videos.
Something to keep in mind if you're a Safari diehard.
Definitely. And lastly, just for fun, you can now customize the background image on the Synology Photos login page.
Oh, that's a nice touch.
It's purely cosmetic, but if you like to personalize your setup, it's a fun little addition.
I'm all about those personal touches.
And of course, like any good beta release, this one comes with a bunch of bug fixes.
That's always reassuring to see.
It shows that Synology is actively listening to user feedback and working to improve the stability and performance of their software.
Definitely.
All right, let's move on to some broader industry news. Synology has signed a strategic memorandum of understanding, or MOU, with Toshiba Electronic Components Taiwan Corporation.
This sounds like a pretty big deal.
It is. It basically formalizes a long-standing partnership between these two major players in the storage industry.
So what does this MOU actually mean for Synology and Toshiba?
Well, it's all about strengthening their collaboration on market expansion and advancing storage technology, particularly in the enterprise space.
So potentially leading to new and innovative storage solutions for businesses.
Exactly. And this MOU also establishes a more structured framework for managing intellectual property between the two companies.
That's essential for fostering continued innovation and ensuring smooth collaboration.
Both Atsushi Toyama from Toshiba and Philip Wong from Synology have publicly highlighted the value of this partnership for their customers.
And they both expressed excitement about future collaborative efforts.
This MOU officially went into effect on March 18th, 2025, so it's pretty fresh news.
Exciting times in the world of storage.
Speaking of exciting times, QNAP has been busy enhancing their MS Cloud management
platform. Oh, yeah. I've heard good things about MS Cloud.
It's a pretty powerful tool for managing QNAP NAS devices and other network equipment.
And they've just added support for remote switch monitoring?
Exactly. So now, IT admins can keep tabs on their QNAP network switches from anywhere.
Which switches are currently supported?
The initial list includes the QSWM3216RAS8T, 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 QSWM3216R8S4T, and the QSWM7308R4X.
And they're planning to add more in the future.
That's what they've indicated.
So what are the benefits of having switch monitoring integrated into the MS Cloud?
Well, it allows IT administrators to get a more comprehensive view of their entire network infrastructure from a single interface.
So no more jumping between different management tools.
That's the idea. It can really simplify network administration, especially for larger organizations.
Makes sense.
And for those larger organizations with multiple sites or departments, MS Cloud supports hierarchical structures with what they call organizations and sites.
So you can easily manage devices across different locations, even if you're not physically there.
Exactly. Ronald Hetchu from QNAP highlighted that this platform is all about providing an easy-to-use and cost-effective solution for managing multiple devices.
And improving overall management efficiency.
Absolutely. Now, to take advantage of this new switch monitoring functionality, users will need to make sure their QNAP switches are running the latest QSS v4.1 or QSS Pro v4.1 software version.
So an update might be required.
Yep, but this update also unlocks some other nifty features like centralized control via the cloud, real-time monitoring of fiber optic ports, and enhancements for low-latency AVO IP setups.
So it's a pretty comprehensive update overall.
Definitely. All right, let's switch gears again and talk about something truly cutting-edge, liquid-cooled SSDs for AI servers.
Oh, wow, this is getting futuristic.
Solidigm just unveiled these innovative drives at the GTC AI conference.
And what's the motivation behind liquid cooling for SSDs?
The primary role is to eliminate the need for fans in storage devices, which is a major step towards building fully liquid-cooled AI servers.
I see. Traditional air cooling can be a bottleneck for high-performance systems like those used for AI workloads.
Exactly. And SSDs, with their typical single-sided cooling designs, have been a bit of a challenge for widespread liquid cooling adoption.
So Solidigm is tackling this head-on.
Yep, they've been working closely with NVIDIA to address these challenges.
A formidable partnership.
And at GTC 2025, they showcased their first cold plate-cooled eSSDs featuring their D7PS1010 series in the compact E1S 9.5mm form factor.
So a real demonstration of this technology in action.
Kevin Ngo, the co-CEO of Solidigm, emphasized the improved thermal efficiency and serviceability of their new SSD and cold plate kit.
Serviceability is crucial in data centers where downtime can be extremely costly.
Absolutely. These liquid-cooled SSDs and the accompanying cold plate kit are expected to be available for AI servers later this year.
So, not quite ready for prime time yet, but on the horizon.
And interestingly, Solidigm will also offer the D7-PS1010E1S in a 15mm form factor for those who are sticking with air-cooled systems.
So they're covering both bases.
It really highlights the evolving needs of high-performance computing and the creative solutions that are being developed.
Liquid cooling and storage? Who would have thought?
It's definitely a sign of the times. Okay, let's switch back to the software world for a moment. Unraid OS 7.1.0-beta.1 has just been released.
A new beta for Unraid enthusiasts to tinker with.
As always with beta software, proceed with caution.
Test it out on a non-production machine first.
Definitely. Don't risk your precious data.
So what's got everyone excited about this beta?
Well, one of the biggest additions is built-in wireless networking support.
so you can finally set up your Unraid server without needing an Ethernet cable.
In theory, yes. You can now configure Wi-Fi directly through the web GUI.
Convenient.
It supports WPA2, WPA3, and even enterprise authentication.
So pretty much all the major security protocols are covered.
Yep, but they do recommend against using Wi-Fi as your primary long-term connection.
Makes sense. Wired connections are generally more stable and reliable.
Exactly. But having that wireless option could be super handy for temporary setups or situations where running Ethernet cables is tricky.
I can see that being useful. What else is new in this beta?
Another big one is the ability to import foreign ZFS pools.
Foreign ZFS pools.
Yeah, so if you're migrating to Unraid from another platform that uses ZFS like TrueNAS, Proxmox, Ubuntu, even QNAP, Unraid can now automatically detect and import those existing storage pools.
That should make migrations a lot smoother.
And for the virtual machine fans out there, there are some pretty significant enhancements as well.
Oh, tell me more. I love VMs.
Unraid 7.1.0 introduces something called VirtGL.
What's that all about?
It allows you to share your integrated Intel or AMD GPU across multiple Linux virtual machines for hardware-accelerated graphics.
So you can get better graphics performance in your VMs without needing a dedicated GPU for each one.
Precisely. But there are a couple of caveats. It doesn't currently support direct monitor output from the VMs, and it only works with Intel and AMD integrated GPUs.
So no NVIDIA or dedicated GPUs?
Not yet, and it's also not compatible with Windows VMs at the moment.
Ah, okay, so mainly for Linux VM users then?
Yep, but still a pretty cool feature.
Definitely. And what about QXL? I heard that's getting some love too.
You heard right. QXL virtual GPU support is now available for Linux VMs.
And does that one support multiple screens and adjustable memory?
It does. So between VirtGL and QXL, Linux VM users are getting some nice graphics upgrades.
Sounds good.
And for those who frequently set up new VMs, you can now save your custom VM configurations as user VM templates.
So you can easily redeploy your favorite VM setups without having to start from scratch every time.
Exactly. You can even export and import these templates, making it easy to share them between different Unraid servers.
I can see that being super helpful. Any other VM improvements worth mentioning?
Yeah, they've made CPU pinning optional, giving you more granular control over resource allocation.
And there's a warning that pops up when you're configuring primary GPU pass-through, just as a reminder about the vBIOS requirements.
Exactly. On the networking side, they've tweaked things so that the default gateway is disabled on additional network interfaces.
To prevent those pesky routing conflicts.
And they now require confirmation when you enable jumbo frames, just to make sure you're not accidentally messing things up.
Always a good idea to double-check those settings.
Plus, Unraid will now automatically remove entries for old, unused network interfaces from your configuration files.
Keeping things tidy.
They've also made a bunch of smaller improvements and bug fixes.
Like what?
Well, the Nouveau open source GPU driver is included, although it's disabled by default.
So you have to manually enable it if you want to use it.
Yep. They've also added support for PTP time server sync for more accurate timekeeping.
Always good to have accurate time.
They've updated jQuery and PHP to newer versions, and the beta is running on the latest Linux kernel 6.12.99.
Sounds like a pretty substantial update overall.
It really is. If you're an Unraid user, I definitely recommend checking out the full release notes to see all the changes.
Good advice.
All right, let's shift gears one last time and talk about some news for the enterprise folks out there.
Sounds good.
Infratrend has just launched their very first NVMe all-flash expansion enclosure, the JB4000U model.
JB.
Just a bunch of flash. Or JBOF for short.
Ah, okay. So it's basically a box full of NVMe drives.
Exactly. And this one is designed to provide high-performance storage expansion for demanding applications like AI, media and entertainment, and high-speed data backup.
So if you need a lot of fast storage, this is for you.
It's a 2U rack-mountable unit that can hold up to 24 U.2 NVMe SSDs.
24 drives. That's a lot of storage.
It is. And in a dual controller configuration, it can deliver a mind-blowing 24 gigabytes per second of throughput.
That's insanely fast.
It is. That's a 50% increase compared to their previous top-of-the-line SAS SSD expansion units.
So a significant performance boost.
Infratrend is also highlighting the potential cost effectiveness of this JBOS compared to traditional SAS SSD expansion.
How so?
As U.2 NVMe SSDs become more widely adopted, their prices are becoming more competitive.
So you're getting more performance for your money.
And a single JB4000U can provide a whopping 1.47 petabytes of raw capacity.
Petabytes, that's just wow.
And you can even daisy chain up to 3 of these units for a total of 4.4 petabytes.
That's a ridiculous amount of storage.
It really is. InfraTrend is even showcasing solution where the JB4000U is being used with their Eon Store GSU.2 NVMe unified storage systems to create high performance and cost effective backup solutions.
So a complete package for those with demanding storage needs?
Frank Lee from InfraTrend emphasized the superior performance and high capacity that the JB4000U brings to the table.
Sounds like a compelling option for businesses that are dealing with massive amounts of data.
Definitely. All right, let's wrap things up with a couple of smaller updates.
Okay, what else is on the menu?
QNAP has released a new firmware version for both their QTS and QITS Hero operating systems.
The ever-important firmware updates.
The version number is 5.2.4.3070 build 20250312.
All right, what's new and improved?
Well, as always, there are multiple security enhancements.
Keeping our NAS devices safe and sound.
They've also made some improvements to the DHCP server creation and editing process.
Making it easier to set up and manage your network.
And you can now see the connection status of your Thunderbolt adapters right in the QTS KeyS Hero interface.
Handy little addition.
They've also updated a Western Digital device analytics to version 8.70.5, which can help you monitor the health of your Western Digital hard drives.
Always good to keep an eye on those.
And of course, they fixed a bunch of bugs.
Squishy those bugs.
The full list of fixed issues is pretty long, but it includes things like RAID group and shared folder errors after firmware updates, issues with ARM-based NAS devices joining Windows Server 2025 domains, various SMB daemon issues, log message errors, UI glitches, problems with WebDAV transfer speeds, login authentication issues, notifications related to the QDA A2AR adapter firmware, and even issues with port trunking group status.
So a pretty wide range of fixes.
I'd recommend checking the full release notes to see if any of these were affecting your specific setup.
Good advice.
Now, for our UK listeners, Ugreen's NASSync series has officially launched in the UK.
Oh, yeah. I've heard good things about those.
They're offering a 10% discount as part of the launch promotion.
Nice.
The NASSync lineup includes models like the DXP 4800 Plus and the DXP 6800 Pro, among others.
So if you're in the UK and in the market for a new NAS, it's worth checking out what Ugreen has to offer.
And finally, let's end with some truly mind-blowing news on the storage capacity front.
Hit me with it.
Kioxia has just announced their LC9 Enterprise SSD, and it boasts a massive 122.88 terabyte capacity.
122.88 terabytes. That's insane.
It's a new realm of storage density.
How did they manage to cram so much storage into a single drive?
The LC9 utilizes their cutting-edge 2-terabit BSCS8 QLC 3D NAND flash memory chips.
2-terabit chips? That's impressive.
Kioxia is claiming it's the first SSD to use memory chips with this density, although we have seen other manufacturers showcasing similar designs.
So the race is on for ultra-high capacity drives.
The LC9 will come in a standard 2.5-inch form factor, likely with a 15-millimeter height to accommodate all those memory chips, and it'll feature a dual-port PCIe 5.0 interface for.